The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. Welcome. Nice to see you all. Happy whatever it is when we're in a new daylight savings thing. Happy new daylight savings season. So I'd like to start us off with a poem this evening. You won't be surprised to hear it's by Rosemary Traumer. It's called Sacred Pause. Sacred Pause by Rosemary Traumer. And it goes like this. Only when I stop hiking do I finally see the flowers of the wild blueberries. First one, then five, then they are everywhere. How did I miss all those tiny pink bells that will soon become dark, sweet fruit? How often in my haste do I miss what is right here? The thing I most long to see. Once I start seeing the blueberry flowers, I can't stop seeing them. Sometimes it's like this with kindness, with peace, with beauty, with love. I like this idea that only when I stop hiking do I finally see the flowers of the wild blueberries. There's this way that with mindfulness practice is kind of similar too. We might have these ideas like when we're hiking, like, okay, I got to get my exercise in, or I got to be in nature or something. I got to get to the top of this hill. I got to get to the next junction or something. And there's this way we're just hiking. And then when we're doing that, we're kind of like missing some of what's on the side. Of course, we're noticing things. We're not falling off the trail or tripping on roots or something like this. But there's this way when we put down this idea that, okay, I'm hiking, that then something else becomes available. We start to see more. And what Rosemary Traumer is pointing to here, she's pointing to flowers that will turn into fruit. So maybe there's a way that even seeing, we could say, some things that are subtle and maybe not so obvious, and things that can really grow and have an impact on us or on others. So in this way, seeing more doesn't require more effort. Instead, we'd say it's the opposite. It's stopping that allows the seeing more. It's no longer the sense of like, okay, I'm doing this hiking thing and I got to get somewhere. Maybe it's not stopping literally. Maybe there's still hiking that's happening, but it's noticing how we feel like sometimes we're on a mission, like we have to, you know, get things done, and we're not really noticing our experience. There's this way in which maybe being oriented towards getting somewhere or having some particular experience prevents us from actually seeing what's here. We're so focused about what's going to be. We don't actually see what's happening here, this moment. And so one thing that we can appreciate is like these flowers, these little blueberry flowers in this poem, they weren't like created by stopping the hiking. They were there already. They just weren't noticed. So in some ways, I'd like to suggest what we could say is a completely artificial distinction. That mindfulness, sometimes, not always, sometimes we can be practicing mindfulness in such a way of like, okay, well, I gotta be mindful. And we're like jumping onto the object or to our experience or what's we think is happening. And we don't bring some curiosity. Our curiosity is more this openness about, what's here? Whereas mindfulness might be like, okay, I gotta note this and note this and note that. And curiosity is like, I wonder what's here. So in this way, sometimes people, when I have practice discussions with them, like in a retreat setting, for example, they will say something like, I had so many bad meditations. They'll say something like this, some version of this. And then I can't help myself. I always ask them, what made it bad? Like, well, why are you assigning this label bad to these meditations? And they'll say, I had too many thoughts or too much restlessness, or there's so many things they could say. Not enough calm. The body was uncomfortable. And to be sure, these are all uncomfortable experiences, right? I'm not saying that this is like an ideal experience, but it's not bad. It's just what happened. And there's this way in which the mind can get into this, okay, I gotta be mindful of what's happening. And then it's also falls into this maybe evaluative, we have to judge it and assign a meaning to it or make it be good or bad. This isn't going well. This isn't like the last meditation I had. These kind of like thoughts come in when we notice the discomfort or the distraction or the restlessness. So in this way, the mind moves from noticing experiences so quickly to evaluating them. And then once we make this evaluation, then it kind of turns into another experience because there isn't so much curiosity anymore. Oh, this is a bad meditation. And then there's this way in which there isn't so much curiosity because curiosity would be asking, what's happening here? What's really happening? What's going on? Without so much the slapping the label on it or this evaluation, because as soon as we assign a meaning or a value to it, then we start to have a relationship with that meaning or value. We're not so much experiencing as much as like, here's bad meditation, and then here's data to collect our judgment that we had, this judgment that it should be different. So curiosity is asking, what's actually happening here? It's not asking, is this a good one or a bad one, but just what's happening? So maybe without curiosity, mindfulness or mindfulness practice can feel a little bit like surveillance. Like we're just kind of like watching what we're doing and maybe categorizing it or something like this. And again, like maybe I'm making this artificial distinction, but I really want to highlight this notion of can we bring some openness to our experience so that we can see what's there, not just like in the poem, like what's the next step on the trail. Because this type of surveillance, maybe surveillance mindfulness, maybe we could call it, is something of way of, it becomes like narrow and just really evaluative. It can bring some tightness and some, a lot of effort that's getting applied. And this is part of the art of practice, is to know how much effort to apply. And when is it helpful to notice, like, there is a lot of restlessness here, and maybe we can take longer exhales to help bring some ease to the body, which might bring some ease to the mind, for example. Maybe there might be something that we could do help to support the practice, as opposed to just kind of like evaluating. So curiosity, the way that I'm talking about it tonight, because it has a little bit different stance than this mindfulness surveillance or surveillance mindfulness. So curiosity is interested, but it doesn't have this like pushy feeling to it. It doesn't have this, like, things should be a certain way, let me see if they are that way attitude. Instead, it's like it's intentional, so curiosity is being present there, but it's not heavy. It's not like landing on it, on our experience and smothering it in some kind of way. We could say that curiosity is aware and awake, but it's not forceful. It's more gentle. And when I think of curiosity, often I'm thinking of children. You know, when people are young, they're often asking, well, why? Why is the sky blue? You know, these types of questions, just because they want to know. Is there a way that we can bring some of this innocence, maybe? We could use this word innocence because mindfulness sometimes brings this whole baggage with it. It should be this way. It shouldn't be that way. I should be calm by now. That person sitting next to me shouldn't be breathing so loudly or whatever it might be. On retreats, we hear everything. But all this stuff that comes up in people's minds. So maybe there's this way that curiosity also brings some embodied experience or an embodied approach to our experience. And I'm using this word embodied to highlight that curiosity is not an analysis. Sometimes mindfulness can slip into some analysis, which maybe it's not mindfulness so much anymore. But there's this way in which we can try to figure things out so that we can fix them, so that they can be how we think they should be. So maybe we could say these are three different ways we could approach our experience. There's mindful, just being aware, which sometimes has this, I like this word surveillance, just because it sounds a little bit, it's very provocative to say this. And how many times have I talked about mindfulness? I got to come up with some new words sometimes. So here we are, surveillance. Sometimes it has that feeling. The second one is maybe some curiosity. And the third is analysis. Let me change this. I want to manipulate and manufacture, manager, fix my experience. And this isn't to say that sometimes our experience can't be, you know, modified with the way that we approach it. But that's very different than bringing a sense of openness to our experience. So whereas this idea of analysis is we're trying to figure things out and to like maybe like solve the meditation, curiosity is more like this willingness to be taught by our experience, a willingness to learn from our experience as opposed to fix our experience. Such a different dynamic. So if this, we might say the judging mind sometimes can have with the mindfulness can say like, I know what this is. It's this is a bad sit. I'm distracted and restless. And whereas curiosity would say something like, well, wait, let me look again. Well, let's see what's really happening. So in this way, curiosity like changes the atmosphere, changes the experience of meditation or just being with our experience. Whereas judgment, which often comes with mindfulness, is like narrowing and maybe even hardening the heart. Like, this is bad. There's a way if we use that kind of evaluation, it kind of like we want to have a little bit distance from it, or we have to fix it in some kind of way. And it turns experience into a test in some kind of way. Am I passing this test or am I failing in some kind of way? Whereas curiosity just makes room for whatever's there, for whatever's happening. And to be sure, sometimes what's happening is unpleasant. Sometimes what's happening is not what we want. And so much about this practice is, can that be okay? Can we hold an experience anyway? Because so often we're running away from and doing everything we can to avoid them, and then we end up kind of like bracing and armoring ourselves and not even experiencing our life because there's uncomfortable experiences, including being restless or having some pain in the knee while we're meditating. So in this way, we could say that curiosity would help us to receive experience. Have this openness and receive, as opposed to go out and pounce on experience. Sometimes when we're doing mindfulness practice, and wow, we did I do a lot of this early in my practice. I had this sense that I had to like really be on the object, often it was the breath. And I just didn't notice how I was like jumping on it and grabbing on as hard as I could in some kind of way. Giving myself a headache and being tense. And then the sense when the bell rang at the end, like, oh, finally, yield at the end, you know, that kind of feeling. But we can't sustain that. And it's, you know, we're not trying to meditate in order to like make ourselves more tight and constricted. So in this way, rather than feeling maybe tight or overheated, if we're bringing in some curiosity, there's more receiving, more listening to what's happening. And then what's happening, if there's this more, this stance of receiving, there can be learning. That's difficult to do when we're just trying to like bounce onto our experience. Because what is it that we can learn? We start to learn about our relationship to our experience. That's been implicit in what I've been talking about. But so often we are just noticing that the object of experience, whether it's the breath or the pain in the knee or sounds, but we aren't noticing our relationship to them. This subtle way in which we're saying, no, I don't want this. This subtle way in which there's a like this aversion that's pushing against it. Or maybe there's this subtle way and like, I really want this to stay. I want this experience, this happiness, this ease that I'm experiencing. I really want it to stay. Please don't change. And when we start to see our relationship to experience, then that really starts to open the door to freedom, peace, and ease. Because we can't control our experience. I mean, life brings us what it brings us. Sounds arise when they arise. We don't get to choose all our thoughts, precisely the content and when they arise. If they could, you wouldn't need them. Meditation practice, you would just think happy thoughts all day long and you'd be happy. We don't control our environment. We don't control when we get sick or all these types of things, right? The only thing is our relationship to our experience. This is the only thing that can be different, not the actual experience as it arises. What's happening is happening because of all these other things are happening. There's pain in the knee because there's some physiological anatomical thing happening and you're sitting in a particular position. If you didn't have that particular physiology or anatomy or sit in that position, there wouldn't be pain, but there is. And it's like a lawful way why things arise. And there's even a lawful way why our relationship is to those experiences. They're uncomfortable. Many of them, we want more of them. But if we can bring some curiosity to what's happening, then there can be some learning, some receiving of the experience with some openness, which allows our relationship to that experience to become better seen, known in a different way. So not only is this, what is this mood, or what is this, is the mind calm or busy, or what is that sound? This How am I relating to this? Curiosity can be bringing this. It can be, how is the mind meeting this moment? What's the attitude towards this experience? And sometimes this can be dropped in like a little question. And again, it's not that we have to find the answer. It's just to kind of like shift away from really grabbing onto the object of whatever our mindfulness is, and instead to bring some curiosity, like, oh yeah, there's the object, and then there's my relationship to it. So can we, with curiosity, maybe we can open up whether mindfulness often is just focused on the object. And again, there's a way in which I could give this talk in which I wouldn't be separating mindfulness and curiosity. And we could say that curiosity definitely is a part of mindfulness, but I'm making these distinctions just to highlight that the manner in which we practice really can have a big impact. So we begin to notice our relationship to what's happening. Maybe we notice that there's a certain amount of bracing, a certain amount of armoring. Or maybe there's some anticipation, this way that we're leaning forward. Or maybe there's some fear, this way in which there's like a closing down. So curiosity not only shows us what our relationship is, and in this way we can learn about ourselves, we can start to notice, oh yeah, I have aversion to all kinds of things. Or, oh yeah, I'm actually trying to grab on to all kinds of things. Oh yeah, I'm like checking out from all kinds of things, kinds of experiences. It doesn't have to be this bad evaluation. It's not making us a bad person. We're just noticing, oh yeah, here's how I'm often showing up. But not only that, curiosity can show that the difficulty, the pain in the knee, for example, is one thing, and the relationship is a second thing. And often these are getting conflated between the aversion and the discomfort, or the pleasant sensation and wanting more. But there's this way in which we can start to see them. We often start to see kind of like what's underneath, kind of like what's half seen. So when we start to see this, not only do we gain some better self-understanding, what are some of our patterns and some of our habits, but we also start to see some of our views and beliefs. And views and beliefs have such a big impact on our experience. Maybe some of our beliefs are about what it means to be mindfulness, or that mindfulness experience, to practice mindfulness should be pleasant. It should be effortful, just like how if we place a lot of effort to other areas in our lives, then it'll be very beneficial. Or so once a belief is seen, then there can be a little more space around it. Maybe it's still, we still believe it, but maybe it's not quite as convincing. So is there this way we can notice some of our beliefs that I'm failing unless everything turns out the exact way I think it should? Or as I said earlier, like if I don't try hard, then nothing good will happen. Or things are not safe unless I completely understand everything. I have to figure everything out and make sure that I have it labeled properly and in its right place or something like this. This is something that I definitely had a lot of. I used to have this idea that anything that I didn't quite completely understand somehow was uncomfortable in a way that I really wanted to avoid. So then I had to figure everything out. Exhausting. And to be, you know, to be fair, I love figuring things out. Because it's fun to, like, oh, look, what? Okay, now I get it. But there's also this way it can be okay when things aren't known. Can it be okay that things aren't clear? Can that be okay? So with curiosity, we can start to see some of these underlying beliefs that are fueling our experiences, whether we realize it or not. They probably have such, our beliefs and our views have probably have such a big impact on our experience, much bigger than we realize, because they're influencing what we pay attention to and what we don't pay attention to. So in this way, we could say curiosity becomes our doorway to wisdom. It reveals that experience is not only a sensation, but it's also part of our relationship to that experience. And that beliefs that we have are fueled, we will start to see that as part of the Buddhist teachings, they fall into these three categories: greed, aversion, delusion. These are strong words, but it's these ways in which we can start to see, oh yeah, there is this underneath our experiences are these greed, aversion, and delusion, wanting more, wanting less, or kind of like checking out. And then when we start to see that, there's a way in which we can just open to, yep, here's greed, and stop making it a problem, and just allowing it to be there. Then the greed, quote unquote, for it to be different goes away. The aversion, can we just be curious, like, oh, aversion feels like this, and just be with it? The aversion goes away. The delusion, seeing how we're just disconnected from our experience, can we be curious and just meet it with some openness? The delusion goes away. Just meeting things with openness, and just meeting whatever's there, maybe I'll use this word, like as cleanly as possible, is a way that undermines this greed, aversion, and delusion. And the more and more this happens, the more and more freedom's available. We're not being pushed around by them. We're not always seeking the next experience that's going to be better, better, better. Instead, this movement towards meeting this experience curiosity, with openness. So maybe this way we can see that it softens striving and allows us to receive experience rather than trying to dominate it. And maybe I'll close with reading this poem again. It's called Sacred Pause by Rosemary Traumer. And this title, Sacred Pause, you know, and the content of the poem don't match, which is something I kind of love. We use this word sacred pause, and there's a certain type of where you could read scriptures or something in a way, and you have like this sacred pause in the middle. And here she's out hiking, something different. I love this idea of like bringing something that's sacred to just going out for a hike. Okay. Sacred Pause by Rosemary Traumer. Only when I stop hiking do I finally see the flowers of the wild blueberries. First one, then five, then they are everywhere. How did I miss all the tiny pink bells that will soon become dark, sweet fruit? How often in my haste do I miss what is right here? The thing I most long to see. Once I start seeing the blueberry flowers, I can't stop seeing them. Sometimes it's like this with kindness, with peace, with beauty, with love. Meeting things with curiosity is kind of a way of meeting things with kindness, beauty, peace, and love. No longer with the greed, aversion, and delusion, but just meeting our experience as best we can, as best we can, with some openness. What else is here? So with that, I'll close and open it up for some questions or comments. Thank you. Does anybody have a comment or a question?
This curiosity you're talking about reminds me of the second factor of awakening.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually translated as investigation of dhammas.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem with that is I really don't know what a dhamma is.
Mm-hmm.
So please help.
Dhammavicaya is the Pali word for investigation. So a dhamma, this is so great. It can mean so many things. And one way we can translate a dhamma is thing. Investigation of things. So it can be just that. And things can be including experiences. It doesn't have to be, you know, tangible objects.
So it can't be done wrong, because anything I investigate is a thing.
That's right.
Nice. Thank you.
But maybe I'll just add one little thing. There's a way in which we can investigate, and it can turn into, okay, I got to figure this out. Whereas maybe I would say curiosity is more closer to the investigation. But, and I have translated Dhammavicaya as curiosity, because investigation can turn into an archaeological dig type of thing, right? Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Yes, over here. Thank you, Lena.
This practice is something I understand and I believe in, but I also struggle with it at the same time, because I worry that having this acceptance of, so for example, meditating and your mind is wandering the whole time and you're not, it's not that ideal situation. I struggle with this question of, if you are so okay with it not being ideal, how do you have the drive to make things better or do better? Or I don't know. I'm just like,
yeah.
Can an Olympic champion ever be like a mindfulness practitioner?
Yes. I bet they are too, actually, right? You have to be present to be the best. Yeah, absolutely. So this is a perfectly legitimate question. And I appreciate you asking this, because it's an obvious one. We're so used to, you know, get that whip out. We got to work hard. But tell me, how would you define better?
I mean, if I'm meditating, ideally I'm hitting that point of just finding that calm groove of investigating curiosity or calmness. Instead, if my mind's thinking about what happened yesterday or what I need to do tomorrow, then that would be less good.
Yeah. So then I would say we would bring curiosity to, like, wow, the mind is really thinking about tomorrow. And there you are, you're present, right? You're present with your experience. You're no longer lost in tomorrow. For that moment, you're like noticing, oh, wow, I'm lost in thinking about tomorrow. And you're present for your experience. Your experience happens to be about tomorrow, but right then you're present for it. So this curiosity is more, it's about the attitude or the manner in which we are being with experience, as opposed to just being passive and not doing anything. Whereas the way that I've kind of set it up in this talk, and it doesn't, you know, we could describe it in lots of different ways, but the way I set it up in this talk, whereas mindfulness is a little bit more of like in there and trying to hold on to it, or and then evaluate it and make it bad or good or something like this. Whereas curiosity would be like, well, what else is happening? It's just being with experience. So maybe what you're pointing to is this not evaluating as good or bad, with that I was talking about. So bringing some curiosity to that experience is more of like a neutral, just being with it. And then it doesn't really matter that a moment before something was what we might label bad, because at that moment we're just meeting experience in a kind of like a neutral way. So it's moment to moment to moment. Does this make sense? You're not quite sure.
A little personal take on this. I was a university professor, and I was in the tenure track.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was finding that I couldn't get the stuff done. I had to work harder. I had to focus more. I had to turn off my curiosity. It was that perception that, you know, that's not what I want to be. I want to be a curious person who's open to these other things. I turned off my curiosity enough to get my tenure, and then I quit. Curiosity to me is critical to a good life. It surprises you with what you learn.
Yeah, yeah. But you had to turn your curiosity off in order to be professionally successful?
Yes. I couldn't do it. I mean, probably some other skills would have been another way to do it, but the only way I could see it is...
Like to really just focus and publish those papers,
and
publish or perish.
Get my pubs, and get my my research granted, and yeah. Get it, and then I says, that's not the person I want to be.
Yeah, yeah. So the good news is that meditation is different than being a tenure track professor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. Somebody else have a comment or a question? Can we send the microphone this way? Or
what role does beginner's mind have with curiosity, being able to say, I don't know?
Beautiful. I'd say it's the same. Yeah. Beginner's mind is the opposite of saying that I'm an expert. Pff, I already know this. I don't really need to pay attention. Curiosity, I would say, is beginner's mind. Many of you might know that expression, right? From Zen mind, beginner's mind, right? Kind of that. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm pointing to here. Anybody else have a comment or a question? Okay. So I wanted to say, I'm curious if you'll have a good rest of the evening. I hope you do. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the evening and safe travels home. Thank you.